I was worried my internet has been questionable today, and I wasn't thinking it was grabbing the stream, so I'm glad it did. Thank you so much for joining us. This is Hashtag No Limits. Hashtag No Limits is about people who society has placed limits upon, but who have busted through those limits. Ophelia says in Hamlet, "We know who we are, but not who we will be." And I believe that to be 100% true. And I believe there is no more beautiful example than the caterpillar turning into the butterfly. The caterpillar literally dissolves into its cells and then reforms into the butterfly. That can't be easy. Then it has to struggle in the cocoon in order for its wings to be strong enough to fly, in order for it to take itself to all the beautiful places that it wants to go to. And none of that can be easy either. However, it happens. And we have people doing this all the time as well. And so I'm happy to bring to you today my guest, Chris Hansen of Life Skills Advocate, because he's going to share with us some necessary tools that our students who are getting out of high school are needing that is often lacking. And so he's got some great resources. He's got a coupon he's going to share with us later. So let's get into it. And I'm sorry, I'm slightly distracted because I'm getting a message about Facebook through my StreamYard here. So Chris, welcome. How are you doing today?
I am doing great. Thank you, Shelley. It's awesome to be here. And I love your caterpillar reference at the beginning. That was beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, I know the tadpole changes into the frog, but that's not as pretty as the caterpillar going into the butterfly. So that's the analogy that I've used. So I do want to mention, and I always forget this businessy part. If you are watching live or in the replay, give us a hashtag live or hashtag replay and let us know where you're watching from. So Chris, tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. First and foremost, I am located in the Seattle area, nestled between Seattle and Tacoma, actually in a town called Kent. Some people might be familiar. I live with my wife, Lisa, and my son, Benji. Benji is 4 years old. He's hilarious and awesome. Or I should say he's almost four. His birthday is in May. And Lisa and I have been together for 15 years or so, married for about 10. A little over 10.
Nice.
Yeah, they're everything to me. They're definitely like the driving force behind like literally everything that I do. As far as professionally and otherwise, I'm the founder of an organization called Life Skills Advocate. The inspiration for Life Skills Advocate is, I guess I should probably tell you like what it is, and then I'll go into like the inspiration behind it. But Life Skills Advocate is an organization that started in 2019, right before the pandemic. And we provide executive function and life skills coaching for neurodivergent teens, adults, and families. And our mission is to uplift the neurodivergent community to embrace their strengths and self-advocate with confidence. We place a huge emphasis on self-advocacy and a huge emphasis on executive functioning. And a huge emphasis on relationships. And I'll kind of get into more of that as we go, but those are sort of like some of the main pillars we stand on in terms of how we provide our support and what it kind of looks like. Sort of the inspiration for the organization, I was a special education teacher for a number of years in the Kent School District here in Washington. I worked at Kent Meridian High School and Kent Lake High School. Time of my life, they call it something different in pretty much every district, but the district that I was in called it the Adaptive Support Center. And it's basically the classroom that focuses most on life skills and how to generalize them across multiple settings and multiple just arenas across, whether it be vocationally or academically. The big focus in the classroom that I was teaching in was on things like vocational readiness, community-based learning, and functional academics and that sort of thing. Loved working with those students, loved working with a team of highly capable paras and related service providers. Just did awesome time. Unfortunately, I did get burned out, not so much from the teaching per se, but probably more from just sort of the towing the line between being a family slash student advocate and a district rep. And obviously, in a perfect world, those things are perfectly aligned and everyone sees eye to eye. But I just had a really hard time like advocating and getting my students' needs met at the time. Definitely didn't take away from how much I enjoyed my teaching career. Prior to that, I mean, I think my whole life, I can kind of say like one of the this work is highly personal for me in the sense that, you know, I was a struggling student in a huge way, major motivational issues in high school and beyond even. I have ADHD myself, struggle with, you know, certain aspects of that, including like real-time processing, just executive functioning and rejection sensitivity, a number of things. But I also think it's like it's a really interesting thing to have in the sense that it enables me to have a lot of empathy for the clients that we support and the students that I've supported over time. So I guess it's safe to say that the work that we're doing, and the team that I work with at Life Skills Advocate are doing is a labor of love. And it's one that's very personal for all of us. So happy to go into any additional detail. Yeah, but that's kind of a high level.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing all of that. You shared a lot. And I just want to say we have Fran joining us from Southern Illinois. She's hashtag live. So just exactly what she did for the rest of you who are watching, just give us a hashtag and let us know live or in the replay and then where you're from. I meant to take that off. And okay, now I'm having all kinds of issues. Goodness gracious. All right. It's like I've never done this before. So apologize for that, Chris. So there was a lot that you shared in there, and I do want to touch on a few things. So first of all, Benji sounds like a fun little guy. So I'm happy that you are a dad. You seem to me to be the kind of dad that's very involved, and you would be a lot of fun. So I think Benji is very blessed to have you as his dad. And so starting Life Skills Advocate before the pandemic, and then the pandemic hit.
Yeah.
Did that change anything that you were doing or maybe how you were doing it?
Yeah, it definitely did. I would say obviously the biggest change was going from a lot of in-person support to going to virtual support. And it's not just switching, right? Like it's not just going from, we're working in someone's home to a seamless transition to Zoom.
Right.
And the reason that that's challenging is because the types of skills that I was working with my clients on at the time, and that we still do in a large sense, are things like how to prepare for school, like how to make a peanut butter and jelly sandwich for yourself, and how to do your laundry, like tangible, literal life skills that we all need. And it's really hard to teach someone how to do that over Zoom. However, special ed teachers, kind of masters of differentiating instruction and adapting, made it work. Not the prettiest thing in the world, especially in the beginning, but, that's probably when we started to recognize, why it's so important, not just to focus on the tangible life skills themselves, but the prerequisite to those, which is executive functioning and like becoming a really good, strong self-advocate for yourself. And like, so yeah, maybe you're not always going to have someone there right next to you, helping you make the bed or create a sandwich, but what sort of tools and structures can you put in place? And what sort of language can you use to get those needs met when things aren't lined up as ideally as you'd like them to be? And so, yeah, that would probably be like the biggest thing that changed. It's sort of a bittersweet, obviously, because of pandemic, a horrible thing. But it did enable us to explore what expanded virtual coaching could look like, and making it possible for people to work with us who are maybe not located in the Seattle, Washington area. And so we spent a fair amount of time sussing out what that would entail, and Now we're able to offer our services wherever people are, which is great. And
that's awesome.
With a caveat that like certain things in certain populations and certain like circumstances just don't lend themselves to it, to virtual support. And we recognize that. So we do our best to be conscientious and refer people to the appropriate supports when it's needed. We're not going to force, like if someone needs hand over hand support, making a sandwich, we're not going to, and there's no way around that. We're not going to force them into a virtual session if that's not appropriate for them.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. That's awesome. And you answered my second question, which was, are you nationwide now? And you included that in your answer. So, are you international or just here in the United States?
We have had some people, internationally, contact us for looking for support. It's not super common, but the internet is a beautiful thing. So, yeah, we've had a few Canadian clients. I think we've had someone as far away as New Zealand, which is one on my bucket list of places to visit. But yeah, we've had people from different places.
That's awesome. Yeah, the internet is just an incredible opportunity to reach all around the world and to support. And I love that you are using the word support, because it isn't that the people that you work with or the people that I work with are incapable. They are just in need of some support, and then they're able to do lots of things.
Right.
So I kind of mentioned in the intro, and you've kind of hinted at it as well, that the life skills that we're teaching, you talked about working with adults and families. So I want to talk about the life skills part of it, but I also want to talk about how those life skills are connected to the other part of your pillars, which you said are executive functioning skills. Can you talk a little bit about what you are meaning when you say executive function skills, and then talk about how that plays into helping in the family with the families?
Yeah, absolutely. So I guess executive functioning is kind of a buzzword, right? That gets floated around a lot. And it's often thought of as one singular thing. A lot of times people like equate executive functioning with organization. That's kind of the main thing. People are like, oh, that's exec. But it turns out like organization is just one executive skill, which I'm actually going to use the word executive skill, because it's a little bit more personal. So, but there's no like definitive list, like, widely accepted list of executive skills that exist. We've sort of developed our own, but, literally if you take the words executive function though, if we go back to function here for a second, it means just, from an etymological perspective, I suppose, to execute brain function. And that all happens in the prefrontal cortex, right here in the front. It's the last place in the brain to actually develop for human beings. And it's one of the things that makes human beings unique. Animals don't have executive function skills. Human beings do. And so when we think about executive functioning, yes, it includes organization. It also includes time management. It includes task initiation. It includes planning. It also includes working memory, as well as some emotional things that don't necessarily often get thought of in with executive skills or executive function, like inhibitionary control or impulse control, emotional control. Even attentional control. So like our ability to sustain our attention on a task, which is not necessarily quite as emotional. And so when we teach these skills, we don't teach them in a vacuum. We don't like say, hey, we're going to sit down at a kitchen table and we're going to talk about the theory of time management and read from a textbook, because that's not very motivating. Right. And we can talk about motivation later, but so every coaching client that we work with, we run them through some different assessments and instruments to actually gauge, get a good understanding of like where they are from an executive standpoint, executive skill standpoint. And we also talk to their family to get their opinion on where things are at. And this is hopefully coming back around to answer your question, Shelley. And sometimes, like, when we think about like executive skills and life skills and like independent living, sometimes what we find is like, and it's actually quite often that we find this, is that there's a difference in opinion of what attainable life skills mean, like what actually independent living means. So like maybe, for example, like the student thinks independent living, it would include living on their own, but not necessarily paying for all of their expenses, their food, their utilities, their rent, et cetera. But the parent is under the understanding that that is what independent living means. And so oftentimes these early sessions and the family collaboration is actually defining how are we defining this thing that we're striving for? Because if we don't,
right,
if we don't have that foundation, then we're really not going to get very far. Everybody has to sort of be in alignment on some level there. So then, yeah, once we define it, and once we have a clear understanding of like where the skills are from both a strength and a weakness perspective, and we look at the goals and the aspirations and a number of other items that we collect in those initial sessions, we start to put together a roadmap for that client and that family towards something that we can all agree is like makes sense, which includes working on executive functioning and tying it back to those real life skills. So sorry, I didn't finish my thought earlier about like sitting at the kitchen table talking about time management. Instead of doing that, we say, what tasks do you tend to procrastinate on? And what is the impact of those tasks? And also maybe like what sorts of activities do you get so into and so like invested in that they bleed over into other things, such that maybe it makes you late to an appointment or late, you know, impacts this, that, or the other. And so a potential strategy there could be to time yourself thinking about, okay. We also have a tough time, like some students have a tough time estimating how long certain tasks are going to take, like their homework. And that sometimes often is the driver of procrastination. Oh, it's going to take me an hour, but really in reality, maybe the homework assignment will only take like 15, 20 minutes. So often what we do is we'll ask our clients and families to time themselves doing the tasks so they have a clear understanding of how long it takes, so that they can sort of gauge it. And it takes away the ambiguity and when you're able to sort of measure it. And then that's how we sort of think about time management. Not so much like here are the four principles of time management and here's how, you know what I mean? So I've talked for a little while here.
would you like to take a break and take a breath and get a drink? So that's fantastic. I mean, I have an understanding of executive functioning skills and it's all very similar to what you described. I love the tangible ideas that you talked about regarding time management, because I don't think a lot of people have broken it down that way to think about it. Not that they're sitting at a table having the conversation either, but I think the idea of, you know, us as parents with our children sometimes saying, it's not going to take you an hour, just sit down and do it and it'll be done in 15 minutes. But having them actually sit down and time themselves, and then we have that visual, factual information to show them, look, it really only took you 20 minutes or half an hour or whatever the time span is. Because I hear so many parents like, oh my gosh, if my kid would just sit down, you know, and just do it, then they would be finished. But they want to spend, you know, most of the time arguing about how long it's going to take them. And then when they finally do it, it only takes them, you know, a minuscule amount of time compared to what they thought. And so I really like that idea of that timer and letting them see, and then being able to use that information to help guide your planning on what the next steps will be in order to make a plan for them to help them have better time management. As your understanding of executive functions go, Is it the same as mine in that we are developing to their fullest extent executive functions until we're in our 20s and 30s? Is that your understanding as well?
That is my understanding. I'm certainly not a neuroscientist or anything like that.
Me either. But
my understanding is that around 25 or so is when things start to plateau a little bit or at least slow down. Not to say like we can't continue to build skills, but they slow down at that point, which I think, and I don't quote me on this, but I think it's tied somewhat loosely or maybe not loosely to why 25 is the age that we can rent a car. I think there might be something to that. I might have to look into
Seems logical to me. we often think a lot of those numbers of when we say somebody's responsible are arbitrary.
Yeah.
But I do think there is a lot of research that happens, at least I hope so, in determining like, okay, somebody at this age can handle this much, and then somebody at this age can be responsible for this, and so on and so forth. Because I think it's kind of the same way with like renting a hotel room. I think you have to be 25 or something in that age range to be able to book a hotel, which was very difficult for my husband and I because we got married. I was 21 and he was 20. So that made renting, thankfully he was military, so we didn't really have to worry about that. But I think there is some connection of what your brain is capable. You know, when you're renting a hotel room, when you're renting a car, there's a lot of potential things that have to go into truly being able to understand the impact of the responsibility that you have when you are participating in driving a car, renting a car that's not yours, and being able to, as fully as possible, grasp all that could encompass. Are you familiar at all with sort of the ages at which things tend to develop? Mostly, I mean, I know it's a range, so not everyone's going to hit that full growth of a certain skill at a certain age, but kind of average for each thing.
I have a pretty decent sense of that. We actually have a blog post about that that dives really deep into each executive skill and what ages you can expect certain benchmarks within those skills to develop. And happy to put a link in the chat to that post or whatever would be the best way to do that. But that's my understanding. I do have a similar understanding, I think, to you on that, but just not, I don't know that I have the exact in front of me here. Let me see.
I actually think I have downloaded this. It's a grid, right?
Yeah, it's a grid. It might be hard to find that way. Link in
the chat?
Let's see.
What I will do is I'm going to put your website. So it is Life Skills with an S, plural, Advocate. So LifeSkillsAdvocate.com, LifeSkillsAdvocate.com. And you do have a blog, which was just the part that I clicked on. Up here, you can see that it's blue. I don't see my arrow moving, but you can kind of see if I go to the ones to the side, you can see where I'm at. I get your emails. I recommend that anybody who is interested in this area or has someone in this age that you join your email list, because you send out free resources frequently. Mm-hmm. I can tell my internet is still wanting to give me fits right now because it's still spinning from going to that page. Hopefully you'll take me. Okay.
I also need to do some stuff on the back end of that page to make it work better. But yeah.
Okay. So while we have your website pulled up, I do want to talk about the website itself, all the different things that can be found there, and then what you have done for my listeners that we will share about in just a little bit. So let me go back here. I see that you sent the link. So I am hopefully going to paste that right here. Okay, good. It did show up. So here's your website again, lifeskillsadvocate.com. Mm-hmm. And so we've got the home section where I'm at, and then you've got your about section. So in the cookbook area, mm-hmm. And I saw on the top of the screen that this cookbook is new, and I'm very excited by this cookbook, to be honest. Mm-hmm. The Neurodivergent Friendly Cookbook. Mm-hmm. So why is it neurodivergent friendly? What qualifies it to have that as part of its title?
Well, I think the biggest thing for me, well, there's a whole section halfway down that explains all the reasons, but like, the biggest thing personally for me is when I open a traditional cookbook, you get to the pasta recipe, and they give you all the steps to make the pasta, but then it's like, turn to page 275 to make the sauce. And you can see that right there, like zero jumping around. Everything mm-hmm. for each recipe is self-contained in that recipe. And there's nothing more frustrating or like, I don't know, for me, like more, I don't know, overwhelming, I guess, or when you have to flip around from page to page, when obviously, it seems like it would be a lot easier just to have everything self-contained. I can sort of just like walk you through some of this other stuff here too, but like, yeah, the idea is that it keeps you away ahead of waiting paralysis. So like while things are happening, like while something's cooking, there's some cues in red to like give you ideas of what you can be doing. During that interim time, scrolling down a little bit more, built-in prep time. So like every single recipe, step two is prep your space. Because I don't know if people are like me, if I don't have like that cue or that reminder, I will get ingredients out as I need them. And I like all of a sudden I'm like ping-ponging all around the kitchen to just like, and then next thing I know, I don't remember where I put like the flour. I don't remember where I put the eggs. And it's sort of just, so like the idea is that we're trying to make this like a little bit more linear for people, a little bit more like, I don't know, just a little bit more obvious, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then like the next one is readiness cues. So like before starting the recipe, read it, like make sure it's something that you actually want to do. Because I know for me, like I'll see the picture and I'm like, wow, that is like a really delicious looking pie. I want to start making it right now, but without actually realizing, oh crap, like I don't have the supplies, or I don't know that I have the mental bandwidth to like do this right now. The next one down is kind of funny, I think. Don't burn your house down reminders. So just like little more cues saying like, hey, the oven's on, make sure you turn that off, or like the burner's on, that kind of thing. The next one, expansion ideas, just ways to like, ways to create variations, whether they be like sensory based variations or like, you know, different flavor palettes and things like that. Just ways to like mix up the recipes. There's nothing too groundbreaking there, but I think the sensory variations can be helpful for a lot of folks. Pretty much every step has visual examples. And at the top of each recipe is a brain power indicator, subjectively kind of giving a relative idea of how much effort this recipe will take for the maybe the average neurodivergent person. Function first. This is sort of just like, hey, we're not Julia Child here. We are Chris Hansen and Amy Sipple. And we're good at what we do, but we're not like gourmet chefs. So the idea is that like it's the recipes are great and they taste amazing and all that stuff, but nor do they need to be like super involved. So
I don't think there are very many people that are Julia Child. I mean, my husband is a phenomenal cook, but I don't know that I would say he's a Julia Child cook level. So I think the average person is just, they just want to cook meals. They just want to cook desserts. They just want to have things that, you know, they can eat and they can enjoy and that aren't going to A, cost them an arm and a leg, or B, take up all of their day for 10 minutes of eating.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Consistent iconography throughout each recipe, like with just different indicators for based on recipe features, cook time, and that sort of thing. Action items listed in bold. So it's just really clear like what you're supposed to do for each step. Not every piece of every single step of a recipe is important. So the most important pieces are bolded. And then this is probably, I should have put this one at the top, but chapters are organized by EF demand. So like it starts off with like recipes that are three ingredients or less. And this is how the book is organized. Three ingredients or less, followed by, I think, like one hit wonders. And there's like, it just kind of sequentially goes through in a way like where the more demanding recipes are maybe towards the end of the cookbook. We've also organized it by like type of meal too. So there's some of that. And there's like a chapter overview below that you can look at. But And I guess just the other items, all ingredients are really easy to find. I think that's
no to whatever this is. I love yeah. that.
It might be called like a radicchio or something. I can't remember. I tried the most obscure vegetable I could possibly find for that. measurements are split from the beginning. Cause I find that often like recipes will list like you need 7 eggs. But they won't say like you need 3 for the sauce and 3 for like the, you know, the main thing. And it's easier.
All right. I think,
you know, like right from the start how it's split up. So flexible and portable. We offer it as both a PDF downloadable thing. And we also have a paperback version that's available on Amazon, which I'm really proud of. That was a big deal. We got that published.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Oh, thank you so much. And last but not least, there are no personal anecdotes that you have to scroll through. Because, you know, when you go to a recipe website and they have like a million different things for you to read before you actually get to the recipe. We've avoided that.
And that's all because of the algorithm, because the longer you stay on a website, the more the algorithm thinks it's a valid website. And so now people write all these long anecdotal stories to tell you about when they ate it and when they first discovered it. And I'm like you, I'm like, just give me to the recipe. That's what I came here for.
Like, I don't blame the website, the people who built the recipes or the websites. It really is just like, they need to do what they need to do to get Google to show their thing, you know? So a lot of them I think have been going towards like, putting jump links down to, you know, down to the recipe, which I think is nice, but.
I love this that you say who it's for. I mean, it's really for everyone, honestly. But not only is it for everyone, but your target audience are the neurodivergent individuals. But anybody, I mean, as I was listening to you, I was thinking, this is probably a great cookbook for me because, as I mentioned, my husband is an amazing cook. Me, not so much. My husband does not follow recipes. I follow them step by step, letter to, you know, exactly to the measurement and all of that sort of thing, because I don't trust my ability to understand how things blend together. And I love that you put all of these professionals that could use it as well, which I see here that you left me off. You left special education teachers off the list.
I think it might be up higher. Actually, educators and therapists and one of those big
boxes. Oh, okay. Oh, you saved yourself. Okay.
Yeah. No, because that would have been leaving me off as well.
That's true. So what is it that you have generously offered for my audience regarding this cookbook?
Yeah. So for the cookbook, and we also have a workbook, which we can talk about if you'd like. But we have a coupon code. #NoLimits50, which will get you 50% off the digital version of the cookbook and the digital version of the workbook. Unfortunately, Amazon doesn't allow us to generate coupon codes, we can't do anything there. But so I hope that will be useful to people. It's already pretty well priced, I think, but any little bit helps. So happy to offer that.
So let's talk about then the real life executive functioning workbook.
Sure. Happy to.
Excuse me.
So this was something that both, Amy Sipple, who I should mention, she is our head of content. And I put together and are always making adjustments and do based on feedback, but this is a workbook that is like none other, that, anybody can use and access who struggles with executive functioning. I guess anyone who's a reader, non-readers would need some support, but yeah. So the workbook is organized by executive function skill. So starting with planning, going, I believe, to time management, task initiation. Now, if you remember before, I mentioned like executive function skills like aren't taught in a vacuum, and they're not. You don't just like sit around talking about executive function skills, and that's why we call it the real life executive function workbook. So while the exercises are organized by skill, like they that's purely for organizational purposes. And as you'll kind of see if you go through some of the exercises, and we have a downloadable sample chapter here too we can look at if you want. But
would that be here, the take me to the workbook?
I can find it for you in a second. But like okay. Each exercise will list at the top that the primary skill is, say, task initiation, but the secondary skill is X, Y, or Z. And so, yeah, the idea each exercise within the workbook is built in a way that I think teachers would appreciate as well. And I think it actually may be better if we do show the example. So let me see if I can grab that. Yep.
I am going to go just to the sample.
Yeah, that's
perfect. It didn't show it on mine, or it doesn't show it on the screen. That's probably because I have to share instead of, let's see, I have to share the window. Now, hopefully, I'll be able to move.
Beautiful, yeah.
Between the different, yep, there we go. Okay, I hadn't clicked on the right share option.
Yeah,
this is the planning skills pre-assessment sample.
So that's
give teachers an idea.
Yeah, but if you look at the section that says not sure ? Download the entire time management sample chapter, which is if you go to, yeah, if you click the get workbook or take me to the workbook. Uh-huh. And then right above there, it should say still not sure. Click here.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Okay.
So how we've structured each chapter, obviously table of contents, and then there's a very, very brief overview. Like we really want this thing to be like action oriented and not so much, again, like theory oriented. So like a brief overview of time management as a skill. What is the relationship between time management and behavior? Why are time management skills so important? How do you support someone with time management challenges? How do you set up their environment for success? And then it gets right into a time management skills pre-assessment. So every single chapter begins with a pre-assessment, which based on the answers loosely ties to some of these exercises. So where you see it, find an exercise, and we're looking to improve this actually, so that it's like a little bit more obvious, like which answers go to which exercises. But so for learning to complete tasks within a specific time, go to exercises 13, 16, 18. And for learning to use time management tools like calendars and agendas, those exercises. So yeah, if we just go down to like the first one, which is 13, provides a background of that exercise. Specifically, the box in the upper right-hand corner discusses the different skill areas, what the skill level appropriateness is. So this would typically be like kind of another subjective like measure, like easy, medium, hard type thing. The materials that you'll need, instructions, what mastery criteria would look like. So this could fit in nicely with potentially IEP goals and things like that, as well as more traditional like lesson plans and things. Ways to expand or differentiate the ideas that are in the exercise. And so this one is about time estimation. So that's kind of like what we talked about earlier. It's kind of appropriate, I think, and give some prompts. There's just a ton of really good material here. Most of which has been validated by like peer reviewed research, or has been inspired by peer-reviewed research, but the workbook, I will say, like, as a caveat, the workbook itself is not a peer-reviewed instrument or tool. That's just not a hoop that we wanted to jump through, nor do I know how to even navigate that at all. So I just wanted to kind of get something out there that was useful. And what I should say too is that this has been tested with our with a lot of our clients, as well as like the students I used to work with and myself and all sorts of people. So it's not just like coming up with this stuff, you know, off the top of our heads. So I think it's right. Safe to say it's very like data informed, if not.
There's Amy.
Yeah, there's Amy. Yeah, and there's me. But yeah, and so like even with like when we design our website and when we do everything, we're trying to think like how do we make this like the best for the people that like are on here, you know? So we actually have a shorter version of the landing page because it's kind of a long landing page. So prompts throughout to say, hey, is this page too long? Click here for a shorter version. That way, because obviously this is a lot of information to read and go through.
Right.
Yeah. And so that's kind of, I guess, an overview of the workbook. Happy to answer any specific questions though.
That's fantastic. And again, for anyone listening, whether you're listening a year or so after this airs, I double checked with Chris and that hashtag no limits 50 coupon is valid forever, he said. So no matter when you're listening to this, that is still valid. And I mean, if you have someone that is working on executive functioning skills, I don't think you're going to find a better resource than this. I mean, I'm not in the executive functioning world 100% of my time, but for the, I'm in it quite a bit. And this is a phenomenal resource. And then the cookbook too. I actually thought about writing a cookbook for people who are neurodivergent. And after seeing what Chris had, I thought, well, I don't need to do it because it's already been done beautifully. And, you know, if you don't have to reinvent the wheel, then don't reinvent the wheel. I very much appreciate the amount of work that went into all of this. And then the fact that you were offering it for 50% off the digital versions of both to my audience is just, it's phenomenal. I can't thank you enough for that because I think a lot of people will benefit greatly from either or both of these resources.
Thank you.
So kudos and congrats and thank you. Because that's just amazing, I think.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Yeah, happy to do it. I think some of the common questions I think that come up for like the workbook specifically, I would say I'd like to maybe address really quick if that's okay.
Sure.
Would be like what ages is it geared for? And the answer to that is it's typically most geared for people age 14 and up. There have been teachers who have had success adapting exercises for younger students. But the 14 and up is sort of just the age we had in mind when we created it. So, the other question that comes up a lot is like, do you accept purchase orders? And the answer is yes. So just send me an email or just chris@lifeskillsadvocate.com. If you want to, you know, get it with a purchase order, and we would still honor the discount code if that was the case. And so those are probably like two of the bigger questions. I'm trying to think what else. Yeah, that's pretty much it.
Okay. And you're very responsive, is the word I want, to those emails. When I, you know, he gets a random email from me saying, hey, do you want to come be on the show? He answered me. And, you know, that doesn't always happen. So, you know, he is responsive to your emails. So even though you might be thinking, oh, you know, it's going to take him a week to get back to you, that's not likely the case unless, you know, he's gotten super swamped somehow. And
I tend to try to practice my own strategies when it comes to executive functioning, especially with inbox management. I tend to get a lot of emails, but I love interacting with people, and I love, you know, and if anybody has any questions that they want to ask, like, just shoot me an email and I'll get back to you pretty much like within like a day or two. Usually 2 days max. Yeah.
Yeah, no, really. I mean, you are very responsive and that's very appreciative for me and for anyone. And I love that the way that the workbook is outlined, that it can be used with teachers and IEPs, because I am an IEP coach and I am often frustrated when I first see IEPs for that age, which is 14 and a half and older, where we're supposed to start including transition goals for our students. Mm-hmm. And they're things that don't make sense. They're not necessarily measurable. I shouldn't say they don't make sense. They don't make sense for the individual student. You know, so often I just see very simple, you know, they'll fill out a resume. They'll learn to fill out a job application or write a resume. Mm-hmm. Yes, those are important, but that's only going to get you so far. Time management. What do you do once you have the job? How do you manage that time? That's much more of a skill that needs to be worked on. How do you problem solve? You know, how do you keep yourself from saying things that you shouldn't say or doing things that you shouldn't do? Those are the skills, I think, that we should be looking at for our students at that age. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that very often. So I love that this workbook has that sort of built into it. Like, here's some goals you could write. And here's the data that you can take to determine if those goals are being met or not.
Right. Yeah. I think it's really important to have a language around what we're like I said earlier, executive functioning is this big umbrella term. And I've seen IEP goals that say like, we'll use a planner to improve executive functioning. Well, yeah, they're improving executive functioning, but they're also improving planning. They're improving, you know, time management and those and organization and those sort of things. So it's, I think the more like being specific and is really important, but it's really hard to be specific if you don't have language around it, you know? And so I think that's kind of one of the, I guess, broader missions of what we do is to help people develop language around some of these things, whether it be in our coaching practice or whether it be like through the materials that we provide. Cause like, well, you know, having a vocabulary is really powerful. And allows other people to understand what it is that you need. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I love that you earlier mentioned the fact that how you look at something or how you understand something might not be the same as everybody else. And so that communication piece, you were talking then about parents and when you first meet with them and sort of do your intake that you talk about, well, what does time management mean to you? Mm-hmm. I mean, we all kind of have ideas in our heads about what words mean, right. But then we also have kind of how it might play out, and the way that it plays out in my head might not be the same way it plays out in your head. And it doesn't mean that I'm right and you're wrong or vice versa. It's just we need to talk about it so that we're on the same page as to what it looks like. Right. And that's the same when you're writing an IEP as well. When you're communicating with your spouse, that we get, I don't want to say lazy, I guess we get complacent, like, oh, they know what I mean. Mm-hmm. No, they may not. And if you don't share what you mean, you're likely going to get frustrated because someone's not meeting an expectation that you didn't verbalize to them was your expectation.
Right. Right. It's almost like, you know, to make like a basketball reference, it's almost like a 4-point swing. Like when you can get the communication dialed in, because now the time that you would have been spending trying to suss out the details and the semantics and the language, you can now spend like actually moving the needle. So it's right. Like, yeah, it's really so critical that people be on the same page or not necessarily, always around like outcome either. Like, you know, like mm-hmm. oftentimes we work with clients to like where the kid wants to take a gap year after high school, but the parent wants them to go to college. Well, when we zoom out from that, like what they're both saying, at least in my mind, are I want my son, or I don't want myself, I want to be happy. I want to do what's fulfilling. And so then when we start to have like deeper conversations about it and start to understand like motivations around those things, we can more often than not come to an agreement about outcome, and about goals and that sort of thing. So, So,
yeah. And again, I think that that dialogue is so important because we do tend to box in what we think independent living looks like. You mentioned that earlier. You definitely can live independently with other people.
Yes.
And so.
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry, Shirley.
Just figuring that out. What does that look like?
Right. I think I like to think of independent living as a myth. It's like, yeah, my wife and Benji and we all live independently here together, but like, is it really independent living if that's, you know, like we,
right. I think
truly true independent living would be like if I lived in a house by myself with no supports whatsoever. But the truth is that we generally all have some level of support that we can tap into when we need it. Like, even if I was living pretty much on 100% of my own in an apartment or something, if my electricity fuse box breaks, my, you know, I'm calling an electrician.
Yep, exactly.
Now, the electrician is somebody that's like sort of on my team to like help me figure out that problem. So I think that's one of the biggest maybe like fears or misconceptions that the young people tend to have about independent living is that like you're totally on your own, which is a normal thing to think when you don't necessarily know what's involved.
Right.
But that's one of the things that we help people understand is like, yeah, you're still going to have people that you can lean on when you need it. And that's okay. And that's expected. That doesn't make you like a lesser person. And so, yeah.
And what a great point, because even the neurotypical person doesn't do plumbing and electrical and why, and I almost said wiring, but that would be electrical. Small machine repair. You know, I mean, we had our garbage disposal go out recently and I went online and I looked it up and tried to do some things myself, but I ended up having to call a plumber because it was more than I could figure out on YouTube.
Right.
And, you know, so we all have that support. So I really love that concept and I'm going to use that now, when I talk about, you know, that independent living, cause it is something I talk about within writing IEPs, because we do get that boxed in. This is what it looks like. This is the only way it can be. And so I have to, you know, make everybody fit into that mold. And that's not, especially for independent, individualized education programs, that's not what we're doing. We're right. Finding out what works for this kid, what works for this adult. And that's what you're doing with your plans too, is where, you know, here's where we're starting. Where are we going? How are we going to get there?
Right.
And then this is the plan for that.
Yeah. And I think there's this idea that like when we live independently, that like our entire identity has to shift. Like I still play video games, you know, I still play like kickball. I was in a kickball league a couple summers ago. You know, you can still, I don't know why I say kickball. Does anyone actually play kickball outside of me? But anyways.
Well, apparently, because you have a whole team of people that do it.
So, I guess,
but no, yeah. I mean, we have events and stuff around where I am too, where we have like kickball tournaments for adults.
Yeah, such an ADHD moment right there. But yeah.
No, that's okay.
I think, anyways, your identity doesn't have to fully change. Your responsibilities certainly do on a lot of levels.
Right.
And you can stair step your way there. And that's some of the work we do with our people, you know, the people we support. But yeah, like you don't have to give up the things that you love just because you're living on your own. And I think that's one of the biggest points of relief for the clients and the families that we support. Like, yeah, I think the biggest change is like, maybe instead of playing 8 hours of video games, you can create some boundaries around it. And we can like, we teach people how to do that, like the practical side of, you know, creating boundaries and things. So,
yeah, that is so awesome. So we just have a few minutes left and I think we've done a beautiful job, but I want to make sure that when you thought about coming on today, that if there was anything that you didn't get to say, that you have the opportunity to say something about that now.
Yeah. I did have one little like kind of like framework I wanted to share really quick. And it's something that I've been using myself. And I think more people should know about, and it's called the music model of motivation, or the music model of academic motivation, which I think actually generalizes across more things than just academics. And music is M-U-S-I-C, but it doesn't have anything to do with like music in the, you know, in that sense. So the acronym and the idea is that this is a framework that anybody can use to help improve the motivation of people that they support. And it's peer reviewed and they have like a whole assessment attached to it. And they spend a lot of time, the music model of motivation folks, validating this. And so M stands for empowerment, and students tend to do their best when they feel like they have decision making capability and choice. So that's M. U is usefulness. Students tend to do their best when they understand why what they're learning is useful and how it can be applied to things that they care about. Mm-hmm. S stands for success. Students tend to do their best when they believe that they can succeed and with whatever it is they're putting forth. A lot of people, I don't know anybody who likes to do things that they know they're going to fail at. So right. That makes a lot of sense. S, yeah. I stands for interest. And so obviously things that we're interested in, we tend to be more motivated to do. I have to do my taxes. I'm not interested in doing my taxes, but I still have to do it. And so if there was something I was interested in, obviously I'd be more likely to do it. And then C is, I think, such an important one, which I don't think it should be a problem for really anybody who's listening, but caring. And it's the belief that others care about not only your learning environment and the way instruction is being delivered, and you as a, but also you as a person. I tended to gravitate and have the best time in the classes where I knew the teacher cared. So I think that's just a helpful framework. And there's a website, obviously, with a lot of free instruments and tools that you can use to evaluate sort of your own standing on where you are as a teacher or professional in providing a motivating learning environment for your students. But also there's a student version, and you can kind of compare like the student answers with your own answers and see where maybe there is or isn't a mismatch. And it's beyond an assessment. They provide like a ton of useful strategies as well for each of those different items on the in the acronym there. So just wanted to provide that that framework because I think it's really useful.
Yeah, that's awesome. I wrote it down, so I don't know if you saw me looking down, but as you were saying what each letter stood for, I was writing it down because that is definitely something I want to make available to my audience and my email list, but also just for my own knowledge, because, mm-hmm. As a teacher, even though I'm not a teacher in the traditional sense anymore, like yourself, we are still teaching people. And I think it's very important to have different tools in the toolbox, as my friend Fran says. And by the way, Fran says, thank you for sharing everything that you shared today. Mm-hmm. So again, Chris, I so appreciate you being, I want to share your website again. I want to just appreciate the fact that you were here, lifeskillsadvocate.com, 50% off with hashtag #NoLimits50 for the digital cookbook and the digital workbook. Two amazing resources. And I just am so touched that you would offer that to my audience. So make sure that you guys are using that and reach out to Chris. If you have someone in, 14 and a half, 14 and up, that is in this situation in life, that you reach out to him. He's got tremendous resources. Like I said, get on his mailing list. He doesn't send a million. You send a lot, but not a million emails out, but almost every email has a free resource in it. So it's totally worth it. Lots of great ideas. I just can't speak enough about it because it's an area that we don't have enough services for. And so to have this available is just incredible. I appreciate you so much for being here. Thank you, Fran, for commenting. Thank you for anyone else who's watching. Make sure that you like or subscribe to the channel so you get notifications when we're on again. Thanks so much, everyone. Have a great day. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thank you, everybody.
Hey, parents and teachers, are you tired of IEP meetings that feel like a battle? Let's put an end to the tension and create a collaborative, calm, and respectful environment together. Shelley Kino, your go-to IEP consultant, can transform your meetings into positive and productive experiences. With Shelley Kino, your child is her top priority, your voice is heard, and you become confident. Shelley Kino is making the world better for all, one IEP at a time. Visit www.shelleykino.com for more information and set up your free 20-minute consultation today. That's shelleykino.com, S-H-E-L-L-E-Y-K-E-N-O-W.